Thanks everyone for coming. Thanks for whoever organised this. I'm not sure who that was. Truth is, when I start this year, usually I've given this year a couple of times before. I normally say that in Chesed Mishra we have a lot of surprises. However, I think with the long standing relationship O Yerushalayim has had with Kol Dayanus, I don't think there should be surprises to people. Or at least it shouldn't be surprising that things are surprising. So what we're going to discuss tonight is Asmachta. Now, Asmachta is a very interesting halacha, because many times people make all sorts of contracts, agreements, and they work through many, many details, a detailed contract between two parties, and then down the line something goes wrong, and they go to Beis Din after a fallout, and they get an unexpected result. Beis Din is somehow not enforcing this contract, and people don't understand what's going on. We made it, we agreed it, why is it not working? To point out some of the halachos which sometimes mess up contracts, I'm not going to give complete issues, I'm not going to give complete solutions, but at least we'll highlight the issues. So when we talk about asmachta, the word asmachta usually brings to mind gambling or daring people. You know, there's Bochum one late night, you know, if you could drink 10 cans of Coke in a go, I'll give you 50 quid. Things like that, that brings us to mind asmachta, a commitment which is made without full intent. We'll see exactly the parameters later. But the truth is, this issue called asmachta, we'll see exactly what it means, but basically an asmachta doesn't work. An asmachta is a sort of deal which doesn't work, and we'll see why shortly. But it can apply to many, many things. It could be a deposit on a house, it could be a late completion fee on a purchase, it could be any sorts of fines, people have option agreements, people lend money. Someone told me they lent £1 million, together with a couple of partners, I think. And the agreement was that if the borrower defaults, then they can take his entire property. How much is the property worth? The property worth 3 million. No, we're never going to do it anyway, because we're not going to feel bad, so we're not going to take his house away. But I told this person, you realize that actually in halacha, that contract has no validity. It's a clear Mishnah, such a contract is a non-starter. It can apply to much simpler cases. Another story, someone's, I don't know if this really happened or not, a few people are going together to an event, they're going to a chasna in London, let's say, it's getting late, and the passengers are urging the driver to go a bit faster, we want to get there on time. He said, I'm worried, I don't want to get flashed, I don't want to get tickets. He said, no one ever gets flashed on this part of the M1. And if you get flashed, I'll pay for it. You know, we need to be there on time, I'll pay for your tickets. And then, gets flashed, does the passenger have to pay? I'm not saying what the right thing to do is, obviously he should keep his word, but is that enforceable in halacha? These are many different examples, which all fall under the same heading. We're going to give one more example, which seems completely different, but it's really going to tie in, and it'll show us a lot of what the fine line is here. So the way it works is, there's many different such examples in business, but a big company like Amazon, they're selling millions of products, they're getting back returns of almost as many things as they sell. And what do they do with all these returns? They don't have the manpower, they don't have the money, it's not worth their while working through returns. So sometimes they don't even open the boxes, depending on what the computer tells them to do. They just pile them all up onto big pallets, wrap it up and sell it. Either they sell it themselves, they sell it through liquidators. People buy these pallets, they take the risk, that a small trader will buy a pallet of unseen returns, open up, work through, test items, throw things out, and sell what he can. And it's worthwhile for an individual to do such a thing. So now what would happen if somebody would buy these pallets and sell them on? One yid would buy them and sell them on to another yid. I'm going to say three different scenarios. Number one, if he buys it without opening it, he flips it, he's a middleman, let's say he's a liquidator, he buys them from the retailer and sells them on to individual traders. And someone buys one, opens it up, and it's just not worth it for him. Not good that, it's junk. So he goes back to the fellow who sold it to him and says, I want my money back, it's not worth it to me, this pallet. Can he get his money back? Can he say, what can he say? Any suggestions?
It was bought on the on the idea that it's kind of random. It's like, I don't know if you know, I know it's not kosher, but like Kinder Egg, yeah. You're buying for what's in it, but it's a surprise. It was like you're buying a lottery thing. You don't win at the lottery, or can I get a refund? No, it's...
So you're saying that you're buying a chance to get something good.
Yeah. You're buying a chance, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, you're pricing like
that. Absolutely. Yes, that definitely factored into the amount that people pay for it. And we'll get back to that also.
That's you're basically taking a risk.
You're basically taking a risk.
And
like an investment. Investment is something that's being priced. You're doing the due diligence on the investment.
Yeah.
And it's priced into the
thing. Right. Yeah, every investment's got its risk, and that's what you pay for.
I mean, there is obviously the question if it's well priced or not, but that's a different question. But it's definitely you're buying risk.
Yeah. So we're gonna leave out ignoring, right? We're gonna leave out ignoring for today.
Mm-hmm.
And just focus on whether the actual kingdom, whether the actual deal is good or not. Mm-hmm. Now we can play the scenario slightly differently and say, we'll see later why it can make a difference. What if somebody bought a job lot and he was trading, he opened that up, he knows exactly what's inside, and then the next day he gets a good job offer with a big company, he's like, you know what, I'm going to stop this small trading in my garage, get a good job. So he packs up the job lot and he sells it on to someone else. Is that going to make a difference? What's the difference? The first guy didn't know what's inside it, the liquidator, the middleman, and the second fellow happens to know what's inside it when he sells it. Is that a reason to make a difference?
Again, no.
It's
a death of a buyer. Yeah.
If he tells him, here is an itemized list of Watson.
No, he didn't tell him what's inside. So I bought this from Amazon. I bought this from Currys.
Does he say I don't know what's in it?
No, he didn't say anything.
Right.
I don't think why it should make any difference with the previous case, because it's the death on the buyer, not
absolutely. Yes, I understand that. That is the Moscow region, the logical way of looking at it. Is we're looking at the buyer knew what risk he was getting into, too bad. Now we can say a third case, which is obviously going to be contentious. Now what if somebody is selling, the end of the year, he's got all the end of lines that he can't sell. Selling on eBay, the end of the year, he's got all the stuff which is very, very slow moving, not worth keeping any longer, so he packages it all up, and he tells his friends, some unsuspecting young man, I've been selling on eBay, I've got a pile of stuff I'm not going to sell, do you want to buy it? So the buyer doesn't know what's inside it, so it's okay. He buys it, opens up, and then very, very soon he discovers what's inside it. Is that going to make a difference? So I think we'll all agree that the simple understanding of these job lots, as they're called, is that there's nothing wrong with such a sale. It takes place in all different scenarios. People sell garages without garage clearances. The airport, they sell suitcases which their owners have not located, and they just sell them for a fixed price, cover their costs, and the buyers have no idea what they're buying. So I'm going to read you a halach in Shulchan Aruch. Chesh Mesha Reish Tes, Seif Beis. Seif Aleph says that one can sell goods, stock, without defining the amount. A simple case, someone's got a full silo of wheat, and he says, I'm selling you this whole silo for whatever the price is, £10,000, you can buy the silo. There's nothing wrong with that. Even though the buyer and the seller don't know the exact amount, the quantity is not known. Since the identity of the goods is known, we know it's wheat, we know it's wine, whatever it is, it doesn't matter if the quantity is not known. However, Seif Beis says like this, someone who says, I'm selling you everything in this garage. We'll agree on the price. Bid on the garage, I'm selling it to you. Chol mash yesh b'teva zu, everything that's in this box, or either sack there, or this bag, ani meichalocha, I'm selling to you, v'kach, they agree on our price. V'rotza ha'lekech, the lekech agrees, u'moshach, he takes it. Says the Shulchan Aruch, ein kan kinyan. No kinyan has taken place. No transaction has happened. The whole thing is completely worthless. Why? The lekech did not have any confidence in this sale. He doesn't know what's inside. In Tevin, it could just be straw, or Zov, it could be gold. This is no more than gambling. So the Shulchan Aruch is telling us, it would seem, at first glance, that all these businesses of job lots and gouges and suitcases, they do not work in halacha. if the buyer does not know what he's buying, says in Shulchan Aruch, the sale, the transaction is void. Where does that leave us? We're going to have to investigate further. So first to introduce, why is there a problem of asmachta? Asmachta means... Asmachta means an agreement made without a full intent, without a full meeting of the minds. In most countries, I would assume in civil law, once something's been spoken, been written, that's binding. You said it, you wrote it, you shook on it, you signed it, whatever you did, that's binding. Whether you wanted it to happen, didn't want it to happen, you intended it, you didn't intend it, signed it, signed. However, in halacha, we look a bit further, we look a bit deeper. We're not concerned merely with what's spoken, we're concerned with what's in the person's mind. As a Rachmana Lieberboy, that we need a meeting of the minds. And if we see an agreement which, according to the parameters of Chazal, does not contain a full agreement, does not contain a meeting of the minds, then that agreement is not going to be valid. So the classic case is an asmachta. Asmachta is a big machlokes in Yishein, what that means, what the definition is. The case of the Mishnah, like we said, this options agreement where someone lends money and says, if you don't pay back by a certain date, I've got the right to collect a property worth double the debt. So there the Mishnah says it doesn't work. Why? Because the borrower has no intention of giving his property. Why did he make such a deal? He's going to pay on time. It's not going to happen. So why did he say it? Just to make the lender be reassured. The Rishonim even argue what the word asmachta means. Doesn't mean he said it relying on paying back. Or does he mean he only said it to make the lender confident? And that doesn't work. However, there's lots of things which do work. I've had it's possible you can make a conditional sale. There's nothing wrong with conditional sales, even though you don't know whether it's going to go through or not. So the Rishonim struggle very much with all different parameters, when it should work, when it shouldn't work. This ends up being a huge machlokes in Rishonim. Some Rishonim say it depends whether he can fulfill his side of the deal or not. You got a case of a classic case in the Gemara, is a sharecropper who takes a field to work and says, if I leave it fallow, I'll pay you the expected yield. So there, it's really an asmachta. If I don't work the field, I'll pay you money. He's expecting to work the field. But since it's completely in his hands whether to work the field or not, he takes on a full commitment. He's saying, it's up to me, I'll work the field or I'll pay. However, something which is not in his hands says, I'll go buy goods from somewhere. And if I don't buy them, I'll pay you the expected profit. If you go there, who said you'll be able to buy it? So therefore, he doesn't make the commitment because he's not willing to put his money on someone else's decision to sell it or not. The Rambam holds that it depends whether you've given over the money beforehand or not. If you give the money beforehand and say, keep this money, if I don't do X, then it's much better. So these are all cases of asmachta, which sometimes work, sometimes doesn't work. So the classic case, let's get back to gambling. So what is the halacha of gambling? When someone gambles, they spin the spinners, throw the dice, whatever it might be. We obviously don't encourage gambling. Someone who gambles is posseledus if he doesn't have a good job otherwise. But when people gamble and someone loses the game, does he have to pay? What does halacha say about this? So the halacha is, most Rishonim hold, he does have to. It could be the Rambam holds. It doesn't. There's a question what the Rambam holds. But most Rishonim holds he has to pay. Why? Is this not a classic asmachta? Why did he say if it lands on the 6, I'll give you £100? Because he was hoping it wouldn't. And then I'll say a reason why it should be better than a normal asmachta. Better than a deal that if I don't pay back, you can take my field.
He knows he's going to lose, yeah, most of the time.
Most of the time?
Yeah. No, so he says if it is asmachta.
Yeah, so casinos might be different because you know you're going to lose most of the
most
time.
Most of the time, when you gamble, you know it is very unlikely you win. You're just excited by the idea of winning, but in reality, you do know as a fact that you're going to lose. Yeah.
So if you put down, why do you put down money?
Because it's an addiction. No, really.
Psychology.
You feel. Yeah, you
what
feel.
What do you think? What's the addiction?
You're excited by the fact you might win. Yeah.
I might win. Next
yeah,
time.
But
I'm
yeah, yeah, but you know that you're going to lose.
Next time I'm going to win.
Everyone knows he's going to lose.
No. Next time I'm going to win.
That's a gambler. That's what gamblers is. Next time you win.
Yeah.
That's what you call again.
Yeah, but you know you're going to lose on the spot.
Don't you know if you gamble 50 times, you're guaranteed to win in the end? So the Rishonim will give different svaras. One is, I think, similar to what you're saying. And this is, we'll say the main two mahalchim which I brought in the Ramah, and some in Rish Zayin. in Tosfos, the Ri and Rabbeinu Tam. The Ri says, because it's completely beyond your control, you have to be committing yourself. You can't say, I'm hoping I won't get a six, and therefore I can say that if I get a six, I'll say I'll pay £100. Because you've got no way of influencing that. You're leaving it completely up to chance. You're taking such a risk, which has absolutely no way you can control, no way you can predict, nothing, then there must be a full commitment. However, something which you have a certain degree of control, and already you're only making the commitment on the hope that it won't work against you. That's the shit of the Ri. Rabbi Natan says a completely different shat. He says the idea is because it's reciprocal. Whenever you got two people making a deal together, because they both stand to benefit or to lose equally, each player is willing to commit himself on the hope that he'll win. And he knows that he can only commit to win if he also commits to lose. And therefore, even though there's a risk, he hopes not to lose, he still commits himself to the deal because he gains from it as much as the other party. We find this in other areas of Chesh Misha where no proper kinyan has taken place, but because the two parties benefit equally from the deal, that itself makes it binding.
How do both parties benefit equally from the deal here when someone is gambling?
Because each one has an equal chance of winning and losing.
Not true.
We're leaving aside casinos. Casinos are weighted. That's a different story, but it's a simple gamble between two people
even
throwing the dice.
The example you know is Mesachet Bekuvia, it's the die, yeah? And you say one is going to come out, is you only a chance, one chance over six, yeah?
Right.
Of
if
winning.
It's odds, I pay you £100, if even you pay me £100.
Okay, just that case, yeah?
It'd have to be an equal case.
But do you realize that 99.9% of gambling game are not like that? It's like
you have
a mute of winning, yeah?
Not casino,
any game, yeah? Any game you play, you have less than 50% chance winning, yeah? There is no game that where you have 50% chance winning.
I don't know how to
toss
gamble.
Toss a coin.
Red and black, very easy.
But somebody has to win. Between two parties, one of them has to win.
I'm saying most of the time the people organize the gambling, they are winning.
Not a
casino, any game, any gambling, not necessarily casino. Yeah.
Not a set-up game. Two people sit down to gamble together.
I honestly don't know one game where if you
most
win
50%. Most of the card games,
yeah.
One against one, you can play where it's easier.
Okay, let's not go into the details. You're right. This will definitely make a difference to halacha whether it's even or not. So we're saying that gambling in halacha, the obligation, the commitment, is binding.
So according to the Rambam, all the point of the Rambam is because there is a 50-50% chance.
The
Rabbeinu
Tam.
Rabbeinu Tam, sorry. And the first one was
the Ri. The Ri says it's because it's completely beyond your control, regardless of the
chance.
And
so you accept that. Yeah.
You accept it. You have to accept it because there's nothing you can do about it, nothing to hope for. And Rabbeinu Tam says it's because it's reciprocal, both parties are benefiting, it's worth to go in on the chance that you might lose because you might win.
Okay.
So now let's get back to our case. The Shulchan Aruch says, you know why you can't sell unseen goods, you can't sell everything that's in this house. Shulchan Aruch says it doesn't work because it's like gambling. Everyone's happy with that, Shulchan Aruch?
No, if the real Rabbeinu Tam
just said gambling works. Yeah. So even this comes from the Rambam. Even if you say the Rambam holds, it doesn't work. But the Ramashad argues, you should bring the Ri, bring Rabbeinu Tam. Everyone's quiet. This is a fully accepted halacha, even though it's not anywhere in the Gemara. It comes from Rav Haggon, the Rambam, Shulchan Aruch. No argument. What's going on? So this, everyone on the page is busy. This man, the Shach, the Taz, and the Sivus. This is a big kasha here. How do you understand this halacha? And why should it be? So the Sma says, let's work it through.
It's not reciprocal.
Oh, very good. That's exactly what the Sma says. The Sma says that the seller, he knows what's in his bag. He knows what's in his box. He says, you want to buy this whole bag of goods without me telling you what's inside? I know what's inside. So therefore the buyer has no chance really of winning over the seller. Because the seller knows what's inside. The buyer doesn't. The seller knows whether he's getting value for money more or less. And the buyer doesn't know.
Sorry, that's not a fair argument, yeah? Because the seller might know what's in it, yeah? But he might not know what's the value for the buyer, yeah? You might sell something, you might sell a house, yeah? The house contained, and there may be all painting, and you think it's rubbish, but the buyer buys, thing that may possibly it's actually high value and the seller is not aware of it. Yeah,
he's talking about very specific cases.
It's not very specific. Generally, if the main argument is the buyer doesn't know the value, that argument is not holding. Yeah?
Okay, let's say a different one.
That's assuming he's seen it, he knows what's in the house. Yeah. He's seen it, he's seeing it. But we're talking about a case where he didn't see it.
Most of the time, traders that are specialized in some trade, they will absolutely buy without knowing because they take the chance.
The cases you discussed.
Yeah, you're already finding exception cases. Let's
look at
the
exception again. I think that's where people deal.
Rule.
Yeah.
Someone's got a bag. He says, "Do you want to buy what's in the bag?" Why is he saying it to the buyer? I don't know. Maybe they're drinking too much. The buyer's telling the seller he's got his watch is too expensive. So he says, "My watch is in this bag. Do you want to buy it?"
I'm not saying they're an exception. The active exception is the guy that buys without knowing. Yeah. Yeah. Most of the time, people that buy is because they know there is a good chance of being more.
You're right. That will make a difference. We'll see that later. For the moment, we're talking about a case where the buyer has no idea. The Rambam says it could be straw, it could be gold. As far as the buyer knows, doesn't know if it's straw or gold.
What if neither party knows?
It's knowledge asymmetry. One side knows and the other side doesn't.
There are people who sell these warehouses.
We're talking about a case of a job lot of Amazon returns.
Okay,
a suitcase in the airport. These things.
Okay.
Yeah.
On the same page.
So the first one that Smart says is because the odds are not equal between the two players. If you call it a gamble. And therefore it doesn't work. So that's very good according to Rabbeinu Tam. Now the main thing is for the odds to be equal. According to the Ri, the main point is for it to be beyond the control of the person making the commitment. Well, in this case, it's completely beyond his control. There's no way the buyer can influence what the seller is selling him inside his closed bag or suitcase. So the Smart in Prisha explains further that even according to the Ri, the Vo is that he's taking the risk. But there still has to be some sense to what he's doing. Something which is completely beyond his control, A. And completely in the other person's control, that he would never commit to. Something which is not in his control, and maybe not in the other player's control, or not completely, that person would commit to. But such an unfair deal, where the buyer has no influence whatsoever to the gain or the loss, and the seller has full control to do whatever he wants, that no one commits to. So the Smazlin in the Shulchan Aruch, this is like gambling, and it doesn't have the normal ways that gambling work. That's how the Smazlin in the Shulchan Aruch. Let's go straight away into the Nafka Minah, like was mentioned here. The Taz and the Sivas, they both say, I'll come out according to this, if the seller also has no idea what he's selling, then there'd be no problem. Someone who's flipping a job lot without knowing what's inside, or the airport selling the suitcases at a nominal price without knowing what's inside, then there'd be no problem. It would work completely valid in halacha according to this. The Shach, however, argues, and the Shach holds that this doesn't work under any circumstances. He holds, the Rambam says like this. The Rambam here, this comes from the Rambam, says it's like Masachet Bekuvia. He says, you search through the Rambam, you won't find Masachet Bekuvia anywhere. The Rambam never writes the halachas of gambling. In Hilchos Psule Eidos, he says someone who gambles is Psule Eidos. In Hilchos HaSmachta, in Hilchos Kinyonim, we don't say when it works, when it doesn't work. So he's even a machlokes if the Rambam holds Masachet Bekuvia is valid or not. Now how can the Rambam here be saying, you know why it doesn't work? Because it's like Masachet Bekuvia. I don't know anything about Masachet Bekuvia if I only learn Rambam. So the Shach says what the Rambam means here, he just means to say, this is no more than a gamble. He means it's not a serious sale. And therefore it doesn't work. He's not explaining why it doesn't work. The Rambam is just saying it's not a serious sale and it doesn't work. Ask the Shach, but even if it would be on the level of gambling, why do the normal ways gambling works not work here? So he says, similar to what you were saying actually, he says that here the buyer has got some sort of way of guessing what's being sold to him. He knows the seller, he knows the circumstances, and he's obviously made a good guess. And therefore it can't be compared to gambling. It's much worse than gambling. Say a simple example, we're allowed to talk about football in the Beis Medrash. If people want to gamble on tomorrow's football match, then it's really beyond their control. So therefore, even though they're rooting for their team or they think they know the players, it's really beyond their control when they gamble on tomorrow's match, and that in halacha would be binding, although it shouldn't be done. However, if they're arguing about who won the match last year, and they put down money on who won the match last year, and then they check, that is not something which you can say you left it up to circumstances beyond your control, so you made a commitment. Each one thinks they remember. and therefore they put down money because I know I'm right. That is not comparable to gambling. There, a person put down money because he thinks he's right, and that's why he put down the money. He didn't take a risk. He didn't put himself up to the chance, and therefore that wouldn't work. That's what the Shach is saying here, you don't have the element that you took the risk, that you made the commitment. Because here you thought you knew, you thought you had the good enough information. But the main point the Shach is saying is the Rambam doesn't mean to learn the halacha from gambling. All he means to say is this is not a serious sin.
So in this case, the lekech wants to cancel the sale.
Yeah.
What happens if it's takah valuable and the moich wants to cancel the sale? So what happens if it's takah?
Yeah. So that would, according to the smell, would be turning the tables. Because he should have known. He could have known. He didn't do enough diligence to see.
He didn't know what's in it, and suddenly it turned out to be very valuable. Now the moich says, I don't want to go ahead. Yeah.
Generally, it should be the same.
Yeah,
if one can cancel, the other can cancel. It's not China. No, it's a China. There was no kingdom or not. Yeah. Let's move on to a completely different topic. Different example application of this, and then we'll come back. So we all know before Pesach, we all sell our chametz to Agoy. What do we say? We have, depending, every killer's got their system. We go to the Rav, and we give them a paper saying our address, and sometimes we write more, sometimes less, what chametz is in there, and any other chametz I have, and we go sell it to the Goy, and we're all very, very happy. Go make a seder night, sasna simcha. So let's think of it. What have you done? You've told the Goy, I'm selling you all the chametz in my house. You haven't told him what's in your house. You haven't told him if you got valuable whiskey. You haven't told him if you just skips crackers. You haven't told him what you're selling. All the chametz in my house. I'm all very happy. We rely on that for a mitzvah. It's a deraisa of Valiro. Sorry?
So that was sales you have to put down.
Yeah,
You have to put in. So they ask you to put in to show that you're serious. But it always ends off and any other chametz. And then you find chametz on Pesach. You say, and I said any other chametz. I don't need to burn it. I'm not allowed to burn it. It belongs to the goy. Everyone's got their heck about it. But how can you rely on such a mechiras chametz? Surely this is mamish our halacha. You can't sell everything in this house. So this the pasuk grapple with very much. Even in the early days, where people didn't do such a institutionalized mechiras chametz, but people had factories, people had breweries, and they sold the chametz to the goy. And sometimes they forgot to mention certain vats, certain items they had. So the question is, can they rely that they said at the end and all other chametz? Or do you say, no, you didn't specify what you're selling. A sale without specifying what you're selling is not a sale. So the Be'er Yitzchok and the Rebbe Yitzchok Chana Spekta and the Avnei Nezer, they both say there's no problem. Why? Because what we normally do in our chametz sale, when we're not specifying exactly what we're selling or what the value is, we say, if the goy after Pesach wants to pay up the full debt he owes, we'll get three experts, we'll come in, check all the chametz, evaluate it, and we'll pay the true value, minus 10%, whatever. So therefore, since the value paid will always be the correct value for the chametz, there's no problem. The Be'er Yitzchok says, this whole issue is only when you fix the price. The Mechaber says you fix the price, and the goods could be worth more, could be worth less. Then you got a problem, then it's a gamble. If you don't have a fixed price and the price is going to be true to value, no problem. You know you're not losing. Because schmack a sale. You know you're paying the true value for what you're getting. What more can you need?
So as soon as that, the fixing of the true value, that's after Pesach. But when the Beis Din is making the sale before Pesach, the value that is fixed is not the true value. So why does it work at this time?
Because they never fixed the value before Pesach. Before Pesach, they said, we're selling you the chametz, we're not telling you how much it's worth. If it's going to come to actually paying up your debt, you owe us money. You owe us money for all the chametz.
So what? We do a kinyan, but then it's cancelled later on?
He
pays a deposit, doesn't he?
Pays a deposit. £20, £50, whatever. So the deal is...
So he actually never completes the actual purchase. He does the kinyan without actually giving
without
money.
Paying up.
Yeah, paying up.
It's a complete purchase, and
he owes the money, and then sell it back.
At that point, he owes the money, doesn't know how much money he owes.
Yeah.
We'll work out later, if we need to. Mm. We can sell it all back, no problem. Selling it back at the same value that he bought it. So the Be'er Yitzchok is very happy with this Mechiras Chametz. However, the Mekre Chaim, that's an Asivus on Hilchas Pesach, he says, no good. When you sell your Chametz, you have to say exactly what you're selling. Otherwise, you're selling unspecified goods. You look at Chesh Mishat Rish Test. You can't do that. The Mekre Chaim says very clearly, when you're selling your Chametz, you have to detail everything you sell. Even if you say all my Chametz, that's not specific enough.
hold on. Very in that safe about the guy selling his house, yeah.
Yeah.
His intention is never to pay the right price for what's inside, yeah. With Chametz Ranger, you are going to pay the right price.
Yeah.
You don't. You're not. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how can he refer to that case?
Oh, so he obviously holds that. It doesn't make a difference. We'll see in a minute. But the Mekor Chaim is saying, even though you're only going to pay the right price, there's still a problem. Still doesn't work. So why not? As you're saying, you're not going to lose money. So why should there still be a problem with the sale? And not suggest another problem with the sale, besides the fact you might end up losing money? So this is what Moshe Feinstein explains. I don't even quote the Mekor Chaim. He says, Negros Moshe, now you have to write in your Mechiras Chametz exactly what you're selling. He's got a get-out clause, very simple get-out clause. It says that when you're selling it as a kehillah, the Rav selling on behalf of dozens or hundreds of people, then the going knows he's for sure getting one of everything. He's for sure getting some whiskey, he's for sure getting some beer, and it's also for sure getting some crumbs and peanut butter jars. Because across the kehillah, he's got one of everything. It's just a question of quantity. Now we learn in Sifalef, as long as you know what you're buying, the quantity doesn't, you don't have to know the quantity. However, the problem is if an individual wants to sort out his own private Mechiras Chametz, and then he says you're going to have to say what you're selling. Why? He brings a various Sfarah, he doesn't agree. There's a problem with this halacha, the problem with selling Kol Matcha Bavai Seh, with selling without saying what you're selling, the problem is not that you might be making a financial loss. That's not the problem. The problem is that no one buys and sells like that. It's a joke. You don't buy things without knowing what you're buying. You don't sell things if the buyer doesn't know what he's buying. So this is what the Shach means. The Shach learns in the Rambam, Ein zeh elo kemesachet bekuvya. This is no more than a gamble. What it means is, this is not a sale, this is a joke. He says, even if you're going to say that, you're not going to overpay. Okay, very good. So I'll come to you with a great deal. I've got a great deal for you. Let's shake on it, let's sign on it, and I'll tell you afterwards what it is. And don't worry, the value is going to be fixed. I'll tell you exactly who's going to fix the value. Three traders that you trust, not telling you what the deal is. Anyone want to take up the deal? Well, you don't know. It could be for a box of pencils, or it could be for the Empire State Building. You don't know what you're buying. How can you be buying something like that? It just doesn't make sense, Bichlal.
Doesn't make a difference. Is that what was done at that time? In those days, maybe they didn't do that. So therefore, that is not the way they traded. Nowadays, where that is done as common practice,
yeah.
Would it make a difference?
Definitely. It definitely, I have seen such a svara, even wrote it down somewhere, that if that's the minhag, that could make a difference.
So it's like sorry, you're buying an option on the buying things.
I'm not familiar enough with
that. So you know that the asset you're buying is one that involves uncertainty.
Right.
And you are buying into the uncertainty, because if uncertainty works for you, you get lots of upside.
Yeah. There's always a difference. I don't know exactly what you...
On a professional.
When you're actually buying commodities, let's say, you're buying stocks and coffee, then you actually, back in the day, you actually owned the coffee.
Mm-hmm. So
there's no problem. You bought it. It goes up and down.
Now you're buying a forward option. So now you say, I think...
Buying next year's...
I think price will be X, therefore I'm prepared to pay Y for it now.
Yeah, right,
it's totally out of your control what happens to it.
Yeah. In fact, you'll never end up... You'll end up selling it on 3 times over 2 days anyway.
So if I understand correctly, the value here is there is a difference when statistically there is actually overall good chance of getting good stuff, because on average across all the kehillah there will be good whiskey.
Yeah.
And it's like it's very random when you're buying these, is a one off, yeah.
And I'd say the crucial difference is whether you know for sure you're buying a certain item, you just don't know how much, or you don't know if you're at all buying this item. You don't know if you're buying whiskey or if you're buying crumbs.
Now, another question on this, yeah? So,
we have to keep moving cases. So far, we have really two divergent ways of understanding this sif. We have one halacha, we have the halacha of the mahalach, the understanding of the sma. The sma learns, this is no difference from normal gambling. Buying things without knowing what's inside is just another form of gambling. It either fits the rules, doesn't fit the rules. If you know you're not losing, it will fit the rules. The Shach, however, the Egros Moshe, maybe the Mekor Chaim, they learn it's a different story entirely. It's nothing to do with gambling. It's just not a normal way of trading. There's no commitment from either party, or at least from the buyer, and therefore it doesn't work. There's no ifs or buts, according to the Shach. It just doesn't work.
you're also getting something.
Sorry?
You're also getting something. Whereas in gambling, you're not going to be, you may not get anything.
But here, you might get a straw. Is that called something?
Something.
You paid for it.
Yeah. It's still something of value.
Yeah.
That
does,
if it was empty, you would ask for your money back.
Yeah. But since it's so divergent, you might be getting straw, you might be getting gold, the fact that you're getting something is not going to give you more of a commitment. So let's go back to our Shilohs of job loss. To introduce one more idea where this is actually, I think, 100% relevant. When I was researching this year the first time, I found on Amazon you can buy something called a mystery box.
Mm-hmm.
And what is a mystery box? You see a very nice graphic. You can get between 1 and 20 surplus electronic items. And there's a picture of a laptop and a console and a smartphone and a tablet or whatever you want, with a few colors and question marks. And then you scroll a bit down to the feedback and you see what people are getting. 2 or 3 pairs of chunky earphones. Well, obviously, what else did you expect to get? So that is the case straight out of Shulchan Aruch. I've got a box, I'm not telling you what's inside. Do you want to pay £20 for it? Enough people say yes, and business goes on. In halacha, that's completely, completely not valid. Because the seller's choosing what to put inside. How's that going to work? I don't think this is comparable to a simple case of a lucky dip. Because there you've got a bunch of package items. They're ready there. The seller's not changing anything. And the buyer just paying for the chance of winning something. It's more like a lottery. But now that the job lot is not comparable at all, I don't think, to a mystery box. So let's see. The seller doesn't know what it's in, what's inside it. If he just flipped it without knowing what's inside it, then if he's smart, but it's fine. The Sheikh says the problem here is the fact that it's not a sensible purchase. But if job lots are a sensible purchase, they're a very profitable way of making business. Everyone gains. The retailers gain that they get some value for their goods. The small traders gain, and they gain the whole time. Then I don't believe the Sheikh would have any issue with it. It's not Masachah B'Kovi, it's a sensible business. On the whole, you make enough money. Individually, maybe once, you won't make so much money. That's not going to be a problem. But even in a case where the seller knows what's inside. Let's say the middle case. The seller opened up the job lot. He knows exactly what's inside. But then he decided he's not carrying on this line of business. So he packaged it up and he sold it on. And the buyer, he opens it, he's not happy. So here it sounds like it should be a machlokes between the sma and the shach. If the seller does know what's inside, so then he's not taking any risk. He knows what he's selling, he knows what money he's getting. So according to the sma, it shouldn't work because there's no equal risk between them.
Does the buyer know that the seller knows?
That might make a difference.
Because then, if he could say to himself, well, the fellow's happy with the price I've paid, therefore that is a fair value for it.
Maybe he's happy because it's way above
the
fair value.
But there is that monetary asymmetry again.
I'm not sure. I think for the seller to commit to it, for the buyer to make a full commitment, he'd have to know the seller's taking risk. So that way around. For it to work, the buyer will have to know that the seller doesn't know. He has to feel that there's an equal risk being taken.
Yeah. I'm still very bothered by the thing that, like, the buyer knows what is inside and the seller doesn't know. Yeah? And because that's not the only knowledge. Yeah? Again, there is the knowledge of actually what is in there, yeah? But there is also the knowledge of the value of things. Yeah.
So the fact that the buyer, he knows the market statistics, he knows.
So all
he's
these
got certain indicators, so that's all going to work very well in the shop.
So all these on the assumption that the buyer and seller have exactly the same expertise, yeah. But if it's not the case, it's going to completely change.
I mean, the Fidesz Shach, I was saying, the question is whether this is a sensible sale or whether this is a ridiculous gamble. Then the fact that the buyers have got experience and know what to expect and how to deal with them and how to make a choice is going to make
a
difference.
That was your case 3. Well, it was a man who never doesn't trade and then buys from one of these people. That would make a fundamental difference.
Yeah.
As opposed to the trader who knows what he's doing.
Yeah. So he can... Even if let's say he'd be buying straight from Amazon or straight from Kairos, one of these things, then the fact they've never done it before is not going to make a huge difference. Because, you're right, an expert will be able to make better choices. But even a beginner is not making a stupid choice by buying something. It might be he'll make less profit than other people. Let's move on to case 3. The case 3, we created a case where the seller made the job lot. He made the job lot out of all his odds and ends and sold it on to the buyer. So, does anyone think that sale should be valid? Not valid? The seller was selling on eBay. At the end of the year, he's got all the odds and ends that are not moving fast enough. So he says, you know what, I'll package them all up into one big pallet. I'll sell it to some unsuspecting customer and tell him, this is a job lot of stuff I sell on eBay.
Why unsuspecting customer? Again, it's maybe for him, it's not worth keeping him, but he's of value to very
little. Look at an unsuspecting customer. He definitely doesn't know.
But he more probably is selling it at a lower price he would do normally. So therefore, the buyer would therefore think that he's actually getting a good deal because he might be able to sell it on at a higher value. Because the whole point of him getting rid of it is I just want it gone.
If the buyer would know what's inside, he wouldn't buy it. Let's make an extreme case.
Well, then the price would have to be low enough for him to actually do it.
I mean, it's definitely still a gamble, yeah.
It's still a gamble, but I think everyone would agree. Sorry? No gamble on the part of the seller.
No.
So according to this man, it's not going to start. It's going to be bottled. But I think even according to the Sheikh, this won't work. Leaving aside the fact that it might be a real Mekach Tos, because you told me this is stuff you sell, and this is actually stuff you can't sell, or stuff that's not worth selling. So that, I think, will not work. And anyway, what's the Svar of the Sheikh? That's a sensible way of doing business. Well, it's not a sensible way of doing business to pick up someone else's ends of lines. So I think in conclusion that even though we started off, it looked like job lots in halacha shouldn't work. I think there's very good grounds to say they work absolutely fine as long as everyone's playing fair, because this is a fair market practice. And even if we look at it as a gamble, the buyer is often going to get his value for money. Whether or not it's worth his while to sell it on eBay to pay for postage and for posting and all the hassle of it, that's not going to affect the actual value of the items. Each item's got a value. And if you paid £100 for a job lot and you got £100 of rubbers and squidgies, then might say you got £100, even though they're not worth selling to get that £100. So there also there's a very little risk of actual financial loss, which will also help. Now, just briefly in the last couple of minutes, just to go through another couple of solutions for Asmachta, which each time, whenever someone has a contract which has a clause which they really need to be able to enforce, whether it's a non-compete or non-disclosure, which obviously someone signs a non-compete, they shouldn't be competing. But if the person, the employer, wants to make sure that's enforceable, he's put a fine on it, he wants to make sure it's enforceable in best. He doesn't want to be left. Obviously, these contracts are only needed when things go wrong. So we have to make sure they work. So they should always seek advice from someone who knows what they're talking about to make sure that it's something which will work in best and some of the experience. So a few things people try writing, sometimes work, sometimes don't work. So just to write this and not an asmachta doesn't work. That's clear in Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't work. You could write different things. You could say we've done a kinyon me'achshav be'bezdin choshev, which means you're saying that you did a kinyon to commit yourself now, and we did it in front of a bezdin. Now, if it would be done in front of bezdin, that would give it much more validity, but you don't actually have to do it in front of bezdin. Because if someone admits that they did a kinyon, that will work. It's called a disa. It's written in the contract, I did a kinyon. He gets all the halachas as if he did the kinyan, because he's owned up that he did the kinyan. Doesn't matter if it's true or not. He said it. So there are other ways to write it, but if an amoil, there are always going to be solutions, and every situation is going to have its own solution. But you're going to have to make sure the solution you do is going to be watertight, because if you're going to have a fallout, you're going to go to Bezlin, the other party might have a very good toyan who can make more holes than cheese in your contract. In a very simple case, let's say the fellows who were going to the Chasna in London and they wanted the driver to speed, the simplest way of doing it, might not be practical, is to say, put down £100. Now, give it to me, I'll put it in my pocket. So now, according to the Rambam, that works. Although Shane Mulder doesn't work to give the money beforehand. But once you got it in your pocket, for him to get it off you, he's not going to manage. You're going to say, hold that, the Rambam. Okay.